Welcome to San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist. My name is Catherine Barkman, and I'm a soloist at San Francisco Ballet. This podcast series of Meet the Artist interviews is your chance to get to know us, the dancers, musicians, designers, and choreographers at SF Ballet, as we discuss our lives, the process in the studio, performances on stage, and more. Join us for Meet the Artist interviews live and in person in the Opera House before Friday and Sunday performances. Or tune in all season long to hear podcast recordings of San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist interviews. Enjoy!
Welcome to San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist interview. My name is Claire Sheridan. I'm your host for this event, and it's my pleasure to introduce our guest today, the director of the San Francisco Ballet School, Grace Holmes.
Hello.
Welcome, Grace.
Thank you.
Grace joined the San Francisco Ballet in 1983 and performed with the company for 12 years. She then moved to England, where she was a senior soloist with the Birmingham Royal Ballet. After retiring from the stage, Grace worked in education and outreach for the Birmingham Ballet and the Royal Ballet in England, was a professor of dance at the University of Texas in Austin, and was a school director of Kansas City Ballet for 9 years. And now, Grace, we get you back with all that acquired knowledge and experience. When did you start this new job as director of the San Francisco Ballet?
I started this January, so this is my fifth month.
Well, one topic of conversation today will be the upcoming School Spring Festival. But first, I'd like to ask you a really broad question. Mm-hmm. And that is, this world of ballet, this art form, why do you like it?
Why do I like it? I feel like ballet in particular, and dance in general, it gives you the opportunity to express yourself in a way that is nonverbal, to enjoy the mechanics of the physical instrument. So working with your body, seeing how you can push your own personal limitations, but also layer on top of that an artistic outlet. There's so much to learn when you learn ballet. You know, there are steps to learn, there's musicality, and if you have a live musician in the room, you know, playing for the class, that adds a whole nother layer of enjoyment to the experience. Just the idea of being able to embody an art form and to invest yourself into it, I just find it is extraordinary, and you get to experience it viscerally. Watching ballet, I just love seeing what people do. I can't believe that I actually did any of that because it just seems like so out of reach physically now. But when I'm watching the artistry and I know the hard work that goes into it and the pain and suffering that also goes along with it, but also the pleasure, the passion, the commitment, dedication, it just is such an extraordinary, very unusual life to be a dancer, especially in a professional world, and especially in ballet. It's all-encompassing. It's not even like a job. It's your life. You have to live it while you're doing it. And like gymnastics, like some of the other athletic activities, it's for young dancers, but there can be longevity. And so I just appreciate it so much on an artistic, an emotional, and a physical level that I can't get enough of it.
You worked abroad in England for a number of years. How did that shape or change your perspective on ballet?
It was very interesting, actually. So I was here in San Francisco, and David Bentley was a choreographer who came. He came every other year for 8 years. So we did 4 ballets of his that he choreographed on the company. And my husband and I heard that he was taking over Birmingham Royal. And so we followed him there to work with him specifically. And it was a culture shock to move from an American company where everybody, there's less,
hierarchy?
No, it was definitely less hierarchy in America.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But also, the world in America is much less concrete. Less stable. Mm-hmm. So when you're at that time, when you were in a European company, they had a hard time firing you. Like once you got your job, you were set and you could be in it until you retired. Whereas in America, there was a much bigger turnover and people trying different companies because they could. You know, it's a big country with many companies. And so the whole ethos was so different to go there where people were comfortable. But David brought in a bunch of foreigners into the company. And so we would show up to rehearsal and we would be ready to go and people would be drifting in the doors. And so we're like, why are they taking so long to get ready? You know, it's we're on time. We got to start now. The culture was different. And they had 15-minute tea breaks in the middle of, you know, every other hour. And it made me appreciate American ballet culture for its drive and energy and youthful approach. It also, the deep history and support in the culture of dance, especially ballet in England, I really appreciated that as well. So it gave me a completely different perspective on what it was like for ballet to be steeped in the community, in the culture, in the population, the way it was viewed by the outside world. And I think it gave me a deeper appreciation for the support that is needed to keep companies functioning and to keep artists employed. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about your job now. Can you tell us about the mission of San Francisco Ballet School?
Yes, our mission is to educate young dancers not just in technique to become professional dancers, but also to help them learn skills for life. Dancers learn commitment, they have dedication, they have to self-manage. They learn to take care of their bodies. They have to learn self-care emotionally, especially nowadays. It's a very demanding art form. So we want to make sure that the approach that we take to training dancers isn't just about teaching them steps. It's really about life skills. And of course, we want them all to be professional ballet dancers. That would be the ultimate goal. But knowing that the job market is far and few between, for ballet dancers in professional capacity, we want to make sure that they have dance in their lives for as long as possible, that they retain the passion for it and are the best dancers they can be to utilize it in their lives in the future, however they can.
In your view, what are some of the principles of good ballet teaching? What do you look for in the classroom?
I look for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So when I'm watching teachers teach, the first thing I want to make sure is that the environment is open for learning, right? It needs to be a place where students are comfortable learning, where they're open to correction. So it's not a situation where the teacher is saying, do this because I said so. Like really trying to help the dancers understand the importance and the reasoning behind the corrections. And the teachers need to be really aware of the changing culture of youth. So the way kids are approaching, they're critical thinkers now. They need to know why. It doesn't make sense to them to be told to do something without having an understanding why. They need to be able to understand it physically, they need to understand it intellectually, and then they can put it into their bodies. If you just tell them to do something for the sake of doing it, they will question you. Whereas in our day, when we were younger, you didn't question your teacher, right? And you didn't know that it was okay to ask questions. And now we encourage that. Yes, raise your hand and respectfully ask your questions, but teachers have to be open to that too. So an open culture of learning, keeping in time with the changing culture of youth, and then also the teachers have to love what they're doing. They have to love teaching kids and know that it's not just about teaching them steps, that it's helping them to be better citizens in the world, helping them to work with each other, to have spatial awareness, to appreciate the music, to appreciate the fact that their bodies are going to have limitations and that they need to try to figure out how to analyze themselves without judgment, which is the hardest thing in the world.
That is difficult, yes.
Yeah. So how do you look at that line that your leg makes without criticizing yourself, because your teacher's going to give you criticisms all day long, correcting, right? Constructive criticism. I want to make sure that our teachers are not negative in their delivery of corrections. They have to have a positive reason for them. Mm-hmm. And really, that's what I look for in teachers. They need to create that positive energy that that infuses the class so that the kids want to learn and so that they can learn properly. I do also really appreciate when teachers have a really deep knowledge of the traditions without being held by those traditions. Like understanding that ballet is evolving and the kids need to be able to do, you know, their frappe in three different versions, whether it's a Vaganova, Cicchetti, Balanchine, you know, the shape of the foot might be different in that step. Mm-hmm. And the kids eventually have to learn that. So knowing when to start broadening the students' horizons about what they might be asked to do physically, I think that's really important too, that progression.
Does San Francisco Ballet teach a certain style, like Vaganova or Cicchetti?
Yeah. Well, we have teachers who are, I would say most of our faculty are well educated in Vaganova or have come up that way. There is an essence of progression and technique that Vaganova training lends very well to having clean classical technique. Stylistically, there are some things that in America are outdated in that particular training. So we've got teachers who are Vaganova trained, we have teachers who are Cicchetti based, we have some that are French based, we have some that are a little bit more Balanchine influence. And so in our we are doing teacher trainings in the fall, and we'll be talking about how we can distill the essence of each of these types of training and use the best parts of them and meld them together so the students have a really clean technical base in their training. Mm-hmm. And then they can layer on top of that anything that's stylistic or multiple versions of things.
Today's dancers can do, I mean, you look at the repertoire at San Francisco. Yes. Ballet, they can do anything. So the training has got to be diverse. The training has got to prepare them for this.
Absolutely, absolutely, including contemporary class. Yeah. I think it's critical for the kids to have modern and jazz. And they need to learn modern techniques, mm-hmm. not just a melding of modern. They need to know the difference between Cunningham, Graham, and
Horton.
Yeah. Yes. I think it's really important for them to understand the differences and to learn a modern technique rather than just a mishmash.
Mm-hmm. Do young dancers need to audition to get into the school?
They do and they don't. Ooh. So the littles, like the 8 to 10-year-olds, we do screenings for those students, and they come in and we check for things like flexibility. Do they have tight hamstrings? Is that something we can work with? Do they have archy feet? How far can we work with their feet? We're not going to not let somebody in because of a challenge, a physical challenge, but we will just note that so we know what we need to work on. Musicality is really important, coordination, and desire. Like, did their parents drop them off for this audition, or do they really want to be here and learn how to do some dancing? So we look for all of those things, even in the 8 to 10-year-olds. When they're older, we do audition them. 11 and up, they have to do an actual audition. We need to see them in class because our training is not, our classes are not just open to the general public. So at a certain age, the students need to have a certain level of technique. And then at the next age, they need to have another level of technique. So we want to make sure that we don't have someone who's coming in at 14 with no ballet training. We don't have a class for that person until they're older, and then they can take our open adult classes.
And boys in ballet, what's the trend there?
Yeah, that is actually a really tricky question. There are a lot of boys, and there are not enough boys at the same time. So there are a few schools who, I'm not sure where they've got their funding, but they're offering boys programs where young men can come and train for free for 2 years. They're given free training, no tuition, housing, and a stipend.
Wow.
And they're invited from the age of like 14 and up. And so there are quite a few boys who are taking advantage of those programs. The rest of us are trying to find, you know, talented young men who are able to come and train with us. I would say here in San Francisco, we have a very nice number of boys. In, you know, certain parts of the country, it's a little bit more difficult. In the Midwest, there are fewer, and the more talented ones tend to go to the coasts. So it's kind of it's a tricky thing because there are a lot of boys out there, but there aren't enough.
Can you tell us about the San Francisco Ballet training program? What's its purpose and how does it work?
The trainees. Yes. Mm-hmm. This is something that has popped up over the last, probably 10 years, pre-COVID, where companies and schools have kind of made their own versions of what a trainee is. In some places, the trainees are the upper level of the school, as it is here. In other places, the trainees are actually a subset of the company. And so the experience is going to be very different in different trainee programs in different places. Our trainees are the upper level of the school. They've come through, you know, usually through level 8. Level 8 is focused, the school is focused really on just training, and some of those upper level kids do get to perform in company productions. A select few might do Swans and Swan Lake, you know, second or third cast. And then aside from the children's roles, some of those upper level students actually get to dance. The trainees they're on the precipice of a professional career. They're still students, but they're really close to being ready for a professional job.
And how old are they?
17 to 19. And they do a lot of work with the company. So they often fill the ranks of the company corps de ballet for the big ballets. So in Sleeping Beauty, in Swan Lake, Nutcracker, you will see them on stage in the corps de ballet in the big scenes. And they also will do the walking on parts and that sort of thing. So they really are getting a company experience, but they're also training every day together. And they have their own performances. So they go out and do performances in the community. They work with choreographers. They have the opportunity to rehearse most days rather than doing classes all day long. So they really are, it's kind of in between that professional world and the school. It's a little bit more than school, but not quite a full-blown job in the profession.
And the step up would be from trainee to apprentice to core, et cetera.
Yes. Right. And when you're an apprentice, you actually have to join the union and you're part of the company.
Now, there's a variety of populations served by the school. There are ballet classes for adults. You mentioned that. There's classes for people with Parkinson's disease. And there's that thriving pre-ballet program for the little ones.
Yes.
Lots of little ones.
Very healthy this year.
Yes, very healthy. And there's a community scholarship program, too. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Dance in Schools and the Community, our DISC program, is a residency where our education team and teachers go out into San Francisco School District and they teach in the schools. And then at the end of the year, we send out our faculty who go and identify up to 100 children to invite them to come and train in the school free of charge.
Wow.
And they get their uniform, they come twice a week and they receive training and they don't pay a dime. They are the most wonderful kids. They're usually very energetic and it's their first experience with ballet, and many times there are students who would never have even entertained the idea. It was just wasn't part of their lives, and so they're having this opportunity to try it out. And then as they grow older, as they continue their training with San Francisco Ballet School, they continue on scholarship for a year into the school, and then after that we switch them over to financial aid.
Wow, well done.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about now the Spring Festival.
Yes.
Three evenings of San Francisco Ballet School students performing on stage at the Blue Shield Theater at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. That'll be May 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. This is a chance for our students to demonstrate their growth and share their artistry with family, friends, and the general public. So, Grace, what are we going to see at the Spring Festival?
Yes, I'm so excited about this Spring Festival this year. So traditionally, you know, many schools, they have one show, they have their end of year performance or recital. And so the idea of having three distinct performances is so exciting to me. And it creates so many opportunities for the students. They can do multiple roles, we can swap casts out, I can have different ballets on different nights. This year was very interesting because I made an executive decision about our choreographers. And each evening we'll hold several ballets that are being performed by our trainees throughout the year. So they have a rep that they learn for the year. And so I picked and chose a few different pieces from their rep for each night. And then I also chose to incorporate our student choreography. Mm. And we did a choreographic workshop with our level 7 and 8 students and trainees. And these students created these pieces on their peers, and they were so good. They were so good this year. I just thought, well, let's give them the opportunity to put it on a big stage. A couple of them were 16 years old and have created this beautiful work for their friends. And they'll be working with lighting. They have to learn all about working with wardrobes. It's been a really eye-opening experience for them. And their friends get to dance on the stage. So that's really exciting to me to see that aspect come to fruition. Pemberley Olson has choreographed a piece for the school on our level 8 students, and that is part of the...
Oh, the choreographer's...
Creation House.
The Creation House, yes, thank you.
So part of the company mm-hmm. Creation House, mm-hmm. she was chosen to create a work on the school. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited about that as well. And then beginning of each evening, we'll start with a demo piece. And the demo is, it's basically Karen Gabe has choreographed a piece where it incorporates all of our students from level 2 up to the level 8.
Wow.
And so they get to show off all the things they've learned all year, and they're so excited about that. It's a big tour de force. And then to finish the evening, I chose the most wonderful, difficult, exciting ballet I could think of for my inaugural spring showcase, and that is George Balanchine's Symphony in C.
Oh my gosh.
We're doing fourth movement through the finale, and I saw it as an opportunity to get level 7, level 8, and our trainees on the stage with a little smattering of level 6 students in there from the tendus, which is one section in the finale. Our biggest challenge is how are we going to fit all those tutus, 32 tutus on the stage? So that will be an interesting challenge to see if we can get everybody on there. There are 8 demi-soloists, 4 principal couples, and then the corps will hold 24 plus 6, about 30 students. So it's a lot of people on the stage at one time, and I just find it to be an exhilarating piece, joyous and hard. And so our students, you know, they're really rising to the occasion, and it's so fun to see them doing principal and soloist roles.
Well, this is why they train, you know, for the excitement.
Yes.
to be able to share their love of ballet and all their and show off all their hard work.
That's right. And they can put on their resume that they did fourth
yes.
movement principal of Symphony in C.
Fantastic.
And you know, companies who are looking for dancers later will see that and mm-hmm. understand that there has
yes.
to be a really solid dancer inside
yeah.
there
yeah.
in order to perform that.
Can you give some advice now for some of the parents of your students,
mm-hmm.
especially a parent of a student who's decided to be serious about
mm-hmm.
dance? And it does involve a lot of sacrifice on the family's part.
It does. It does indeed. It's a big choice to allow your child to be a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the most important advice I could give is be patient.
Mm-hmm.
Don't rush your child. Every student, their trajectory is going to be fraught with challenges and highs and lows. And if you can support your child in the love of the art form and not worry about how quickly they're passing through levels,
mm-hmm.
how casting, how all that works, and really just focus on the love of dancing, that is my biggest piece of advice,
mm-hmm.
my most, you know, heartfelt. Because the most important thing for students is to retain that joy of being in the classroom, of being on the stage, of embracing the art form. And there are a lot of highs and lows that kids will go through. You know, there's a lot of disappointment that counters a lot of the joy, and, you know, like most of life, right?
Yes. And plus, they're adolescents. They're going through that change, which is hard enough to do.
Absolutely. And so understanding that everybody's path is different, and, you know, the world is always evolving, and so the profession will evolve, and the way students learn will evolve, and teaching practice and pedagogy evolves. So just being patient and taking a deep breath and allowing things to happen in their natural way, I think is really critical. Though there are a lot of things that have changed now, you know, dancers back in the day, if you went to college, people kind of, you know, were like, oh, well, they couldn't make it as a professional dancer. If you didn't go straight from, you know, grammar school into a company, then, you know, you were slow. But now, I mean, dancers, sometimes they'll go to college, they'll get degrees, whether dance degrees or marketing degrees. I know dancers who've gone through, you know, entire college degree programs and then come to companies. And there are others who, a colleague of mine, she was invited to New York City Ballet at the age of 16. She went into the company, realized she wasn't ready, quit the company, went to college, got her degree, and then ended up a principal dancer in a different company.
Oh, I see.
So really understanding that, you know, helping your child through whatever their path needs to be is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And I know also for families, it's really difficult. A lot of schools now are requiring their more advanced students to not go their traditional academic route. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge decision for families. Are you going to allow your child to do online school so they can focus on their dance when the career is not, you know, it's not concrete? You don't know if you're actually going to get a job at the end of it. I'm very thankful that colleges now are starting to really open up their applications, so, and the way that they approach applicants, and, you know, life experience is as important in some places as, you know, an academic background. And they look at that, they see the commitment that is involved. And if the student dancers usually have really good grades because they're committed,
yes,
and dedicated,
and self-disciplined, and
that's right,
good,
that's
time,
right,
management.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as long as the kids can keep their grades up and parents are supportive of that, understanding that there might need to be an alternative academic situation in their homes, mm-hmm, which can be expensive, but it doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. There are ways to embrace that as well.
One final question. I know you've just been here for 5 months, but do you have any long-range plans for the school?
Absolutely. I would love to see the trainee program refined and to try to create more performance opportunities for all of our students. It's tricky because their schedule is already very full, but I think that when you give students an opportunity to perform, it reminds them why they're working so hard. So I would love to find more ways for our students to have performance opportunities. I am looking forward to working with our faculty to really create a solid syllabus that we can all really support and offer to our students. And I want to make sure that we have the proper support for our faculty and staff. The idea of dancer wellness, I would like to flesh that out further. I know the company is really investing in that, and the organization is investing in that area. And so we are going to be doing that as well in the school, making sure that our students are, you know, have the toolkit that they need to survive in life as well as the career.
There's a great plan.
Yeah.
I agree. It's important work, Grace, that you're doing. It's an important job. And on that note, we have come to the end of this podcast. So thank you, Grace, for being my guest today. And thank you, dear audience, for listening to this Meet the Artist interview with the director of San Francisco Ballet School, Grace Holmes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more about SF Ballet or to attend in-person Meet the Artist interviews and performances, visit sfballet.org. See you at the ballet.